Hello, and welcome to the Inside AVs podcast for April the 16th, 2021. This is episode number 54. Our top stories today, Mercedes EQS has made its full debut, finally. The Audi Q4 e-tron has arrived in style. Battery crisis is averted with a $1.8 billion settlement. I'm Don Michioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge with Tom Malogny. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from Out of Spec Studios. He also puts together splendidly elucidating videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. Please subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. Okay, so welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. Let's kick it off by talking about what's been charging up in our driveways this week. Kyle, I believe you spent some time with the Mercedes EQS, but we're going to talk about that in a minute anyway. Also, right after the podcast is over, I believe you're going to go ride some electric snowmobiles from a Canadian company called Taiga. So looking forward to hearing about that next week. Is that right?
Yeah, so we just got dumped on with like 9 inches of snow. The mountains got hit even harder. And we are going to go put on the new, we just got sent some pre-production Nokian Hakkapeliitta 10 EVs that are studded winter tires made specifically for electric cars. So we're going right after this podcast, mounting them on the Tesla, and then we're going to try and find a spot to drag race the Taiga snowmobile against the Model 3 Performance.
Also, that sounds like really exciting. I can't wait to hear, can't wait to see that. You're going to have video, right?
Yeah, I mean, if we can do the drag race, yes, either way, we'll have video on the electric snowmobiles. But this just reminded me, I forgot to plug in the car last night. So let me go do that while you all can enjoy the conversation. I'll be back in 1 second.
All right. So, Tom, I believe you had the Mustang Mach-E this week.
Yeah, it's actually still sitting in my driveway. Ford's coming to pick it up in like 2 hours. I might be able to get a last couple minutes of driving in with it. And I've really loved my time with it. I got the extended range, all-wheel drive, I guess launch edition vehicle, and in grabber blue. We're going to have tons of content up on Inside EVs in the next week or so. I did a 70-mile-an-hour range test. I did a DC fast charge test. I did a whole video. It's like an hour long. I have to edit it down on the center infotainment system. There are like 10,000 buttons and different things you can adjust in that system. It's crazy. It literally took me more than an hour to record the video going over everything. The new Ford's new Sync 4 system. But I mean, it's great. It's got tons of options and everything, but crazy. Like, I needed a month with the vehicle to really understand what all the functions do. You know, I was learning as I was filming the video. But yeah, so did the 70-mile-an-hour highway range test. That's not out yet, but I will say it way outperformed EPA. And it was great weather for me to do it. It was perfect. It was like 72, 73 degrees. So I was able to just completely shut down, you know, heating or air conditioning completely for the whole trip. And, you know, the Mustang Mach-E gives you your energy breakdown. So it was 98% for propulsion and 2% for like accessories, radio and whatever. So I was really able to use all that energy for the propulsion, and finished up with 282.5 miles.
That's nice.
Was at 0% state of charge, but but the vehicle was showing 3 more miles of range, and it wasn't in like a turtle mode yet. It still had power. So I'm pretty sure I could have squeezed those 2 or 3 more miles out, but I'm pulling off the turnpike to pull into a DC fast charger. There's nothing I could do but drive around the parking lot, and I'd be doing that at 20 miles an hour. So it kind of isn't fair to add 10 more miles at 20 miles an hour. I mean, Kyle sometimes will drive on secondary roads, but close to 70. He'll be at like 60, 55 or whatever at the end just to run it down to zero. But yeah, I'm calling it at 285, which is fantastic. It's EPA range rated at 270. But it was, I think Volkswagen documents show that they got it at 276 and they voluntarily derated it to 270 Auto manufacturers can do that. You can't say it'll go further than what your records show, but the EPA does allow you to say it'll go a little bit less if you want to, I guess, under promise and over deliver. So really, really great showing for the Mach-E. I've loved my time with the car. My wife totally loves it. She's like, we should get this. So we'll see. And then I did the DC fast charge and test. Recorded the whole thing. We're going to have that up. Now, Kyle's done that many times. Kyle's had the Mach-E for, you know, more than probably anybody. And, you know, we've talked about how the Mach-E doesn't have the best DC fast charge curve. And I'm kind of understating that so far. But I tell you, I'm coming away with a little bit of a different opinion on it. While it took me the same 2 hours and 29 minutes to go from 0 to 100%, which is crazy. That I think it took Kyle, I think we're like within a minute of each other from 0 to 100%. It did hit 80% from zero in like 46 and a half minutes, I think. And then it took an hour and 45 minutes to go from 80% to 100%. So the rule here is, just do not stay at a DC fast charger after past 80%. Right. And then it's not terrible. It's still not the best charging EV, but what two of the metrics I like to go by is how long does it take to recharge 100 miles of range and how long does it take to give you 150 miles of range? Because on a long trip, you know, unless you're cross country and like Kyle, most people are probably, you know, going to be within 100 miles or 150 miles of their destination. If they take a Mach-E, they drive it, say, 200, 225 miles, then they plug in and they're going to need another 100 or 150 miles. So the Mach-E refilled 100 miles of range in 18 minutes. Now compare that to the ID4, which was 16 minutes. So it's not that bad.
Right,
when you go to refilling 150 miles, it took 30 minutes. And it took the ID4 26 minutes. So it's not that much worse. Now, yes, once you start, then the curve really tapers off when you're talking about once you get up over the 60%, 50%, 60%, 70% range, the curve really drops off on the Mach-E, and that's where you're really waiting there. But if you're looking for a short burst of, you know, 100 miles or 150 miles just to get you to where you're going, it's not as bad, I think, as we're making it out in some instances. But you know, it's still, like I said, it doesn't set the gold standard for DC fast charge. We're hoping that they rework the charging curve. Kyle's, you know, dialed in with Ford on talking to them about, you know, what they might do with different updates to kind of, you know, compress that charging time. But even for right now, it's not absolutely terrible, in my opinion, the DC fast charging. I was pleasantly surprised. I thought I was going to be like pretty much everybody else that have done these tests and like, we're like, oh my God, this is terrible. This, you know, Ford has to change this. I'm coming away with a little bit of a different feeling on that personally. And I'm just looking out. Peter Wright just said, which is the better car for road tripping, the Mach-E or the Volkswagen ID4? The ID4 is going to charge faster. It depends on how long your road trip is. Are you talking about a 300 mile road trip? Well, now the Mach-E has a longer range. So, you know, both vehicles, you'd have to stop once and the Mach-E, you'd have to stop for 18 minutes and the ID4, you'd probably have to stop for 16 minutes. So, you know, it depends on what you're looking to get out of your vehicle. You know, the Mach-E is a much more spirited drive. The driving experience was great on it. The ID4, you know, ticks all the boxes. It's a great family hauler. It's comfortable. It just glides along the highway. But the Mach-E is different. It's more of like a sport, you know, SUV, and you don't get that with the ID4. So what are you looking for? Do you want you want to be engaged in the driving experience, or you want a vehicle that just does everything it needs to do, hauls the family, you pack everything in the back, and you go on this long trip? I would take either one of those. That's my answer without hesitation. Now, you talk about a road trip. That's a Tom Mulligany road trip. That's not a Kyle Connor road trip. Right. You know, I don't drive from North Carolina to Colorado weekly. You know, at the worst, I go to Vermont, which is 250 miles from my house. Every now and then I'll go to Washington, D.C. That's only like 220 miles. So yeah, we have different, you know, what's your definition of a road trip? Yeah, that was my was my driveway. My friend who has an i3S, the exact same spec as what my old i3S was, came over because he wanted to check out the Mach-E. And it was just funny. We didn't place the cars that way. That's just how we parked. And I looked at it and I'm like, this is like a perfect shot for me to take a picture, you know?
Wow.
Right on. Cool. Hey, so real quick, how does that, someone asking in the chat, how does that compare with like, say a Tesla Model Y, as far as that, like up to 80% speed?
You mean the charging?
Yes.
The Model Y charges much, much faster.
So like 18 minutes around that for the ID4 or for Mustang and.
Yeah, Kyle might be better to be able to just spit that out. I don't have it at the tip of my tongue, and I don't want to misquote. Sure. But it's a lot. It's a lot faster. Especially if you're at a 250 kilowatt DC fast charger, the three and the Y really are fantastic.
So stay tuned to Out of Spec Motoring plug, shameless, because tomorrow we are going to have a video where we drive a Mach-E and a Model Y from here in Colorado to North Carolina. You'll be able to see the difference for yourself.
Okay. And we talked about this road trip. This is one from a few weeks back?
This is the one from a few weeks back.
Okay. So I have right off the top of your head, do you know, just roughly half, like 100 miles or so, or up to 80%?
Well, it's the 100-mile EPA thing's totally wrong, I think, just because you're never going to reach EPA cruising normal speeds on the highway. I think up to 80%, Mustang above 50%, let's just say. The Mach-E, if you plug in a Tesla and plug in a Mach-E at 50% state of charge, the Mach-E is faster. It charges at a higher charge rate than the Model Y. However, that 0 to 50 is brutal on the Mustang because you only get the peak speeds for a very short window of an arbitrary time-based charging curve. But both vehicles, I want to say at 79%, the Mustang's charging at 72 kilowatts. At 79% on a Model Y long range pack, it's charging at 52 kilowatts. So the Mach-E has an advantage for high state of charge charging, but you're never going to use that on a road trip because you're going to be maximizing your low percentage charge curve, which the Tesla is just a monster in.
Right.
But Kyle, you picked a specific state of charge for a reason. Kyle said at 79% state of charge, the Mach-E is taking, what was it?
Was trying not to appear like I was a Mach-E hater because I browse the Mach-E forums from time to time. And so, I gave a great review and everyone seemed to like me. And then I gave a pretty terrible road trip review. And it wasn't even me. I was just showing what was happening. And now all of a sudden I'm a Mach-E hater. So I was trying to be generous to the Mach-E owners.
If he would have just said one more percentage of state of charge, what happens is when the Mach-E hits 80% state of charge, that's why he said 79, it's charging at this percent, it falls off a cliff and goes down to 12 kilowatts.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. It shouldn't exist.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and that's not even my main problem with it because I can wrap my head around only using 80% of the pack. What I can't figure out is why I plug in at 0%, I get 163 kilowatts for like no time, then it goes down to 100. Great. Well, if I unplug and re-plug back in at 10% or 15%, then it goes right back up to 165 kilowatts. So the car is capable of taking that much power. It should have the cooling systems to allow for that much power. My suspicion is it doesn't, because the Mach-E is pitched as the performance SUV. Tom, you mentioned it's more fun to drive, more engaging, power on oversteer out of corners. Very true. However, anytime you try and drive the Mach-E hard for more than a quick burst, for example, driving up my little canyon, I do a little morning 45-mile loop in whenever I'm testing a car. I overheated that Mach-E so quick, and it just thermal throttled the rest of the drive. Could not recover, cut all of the power, and it was not a performance car. Not even close, because you got a couple hard accelerations, and it was done.
So they took that playbook from BMW?
Well, the i3 probably overheats worse and more quickly, but it recovers more quickly. Remember when we had the Mini Cooper SE on track?
Yeah.
It would die and then it would come right back?
Yeah.
The like Mach-E dies and then it kind of just like stays there for like 5 minutes. And then you're like, okay, here we go. The power's coming back. It's terrible thermal management.
I wonder if Ford can fix that with software, or whether that is hard baked into the battery heating and cooling.
It's not the battery pack that's overheating, because there's so much thermal mass in the battery pack. There's no way you could spike heat it that quickly. There's two possibilities here. One, the less likely one, is you're hot spotting a particular area of the battery pack, which would be one cell that may not be getting as much cooling. My guess is they designed the battery pack for not that many hot spots. What it's likely is the stator in the motor just gets red hot, and that it just doesn't have enough cooling to the motors. Yeah. Could be the inverter as well. Ancillary electronics that were off the shelf from suppliers. The cooling in electric car is wildly difficult. Even this, think about this. Porsche Taycan, my favorite EV, can only do one lap of the Nürburgring before it overheats, which is an 800 volt system. Everyone thinks 800 volts like this magic thing. It's not, because Model 3 Performance can do four laps before it appreciably thermal throttles. It's a serious advantage to Tesla, and my guess Lucid as well, for total system architecture cooling.
Yeah, well, that was a big drawback with early Teslas, early Model S. You could only go like a one lap around a relatively small track. But they got criticism. They worked on it, and it's much better now.
And yeah, but the new S's are, I don't know if they're much better. They are, but the three, you do whatever you want to that car. It doesn't really care. Certainly, you can overheat it. I mean, when we ran Pikes Peak last year, we had that battery in the red, motors in the red, everything hot. It's possible, but there are now some aftermarket cooling options coming up that I think could be quite interesting. So,
we'll see what happens.
Tom, you had something to say, I know.
Yeah, just one more thing I wanted to say about the DC fast charge. Every time I use plug and charge, it worked perfectly on the first attempt. So, I don't know if it's just the chargers in my area, because I had a Mach-E here months ago and it worked also. I know that's been something that we've talked about and we've seen it. Kyle and other people have reported that it wasn't communicating. But hey, listen, I have the Magic Touch. Every time I use that and plug in, it works.
I never had the issue where it always plugged in and worked, but then it would fault out.
That never happened to me. And maybe it's the chargers in this area. I know Electrify America updated a lot of them, replaced a lot of the equipment with new
Signets, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Much better. Never had it happen on a new Signet. All of the ABB chargers, actually.
That could be what's going on. But hey, it's worked perfect for me every time.
Yeah, and it could be vehicle specific as well, because the Mach-E that I took on the road trip, the one that we've been using, Ford, I've spoken to them about it, of course, and they're like, oh, well, it's on really early software. I'm like, great, we'll send some new software to it, because I can't report on anything that's not on the car. No software update, nothing like that. So.
And while we're talking about plug and charge, while I was recording my video, the DC fast charge video, a guy pulls up in a Porsche Taycan, and I see him like kind of struggling next to me with it. It's not working. So I walked over and said, do you need any help with this? He's like, no, I know how this works. There's a lot of times people are just brand new, and he goes, I have an early 2021 that didn't have plug and charge, but the dealer took it in and updated the software and it was not working. We tried like five times on the different stations. And I was just finishing up. I was like, well, I know this station works, so let me finish my video. He waited. I unplugged, left. And he tried it there, same thing. So,
Porsche's- but did he activate it in the Porsche app? Like the Mustang, you need to activate it on the website, in the car, and on the app for it to all work.
He said he did everything at the dealership. They showed him how to update it to activate it and everything before he left. So, I don't know.
I'm sure the dealer has no idea, would be my guess.
Could very well be.
Right on. So, are we ready for some news?
There we go.
Okay. So after weeks of teasing and releases of different bits of info, the Mercedes-Benz EQS has finally made its full and complete official debut, or mostly complete. I think there's still a few specs they've left out, like interior volume and things like that. But to touch on some major parts, this is a ground-up electric vehicle, Mercedes first, and it's meant to be an S-Class level luxury vehicle. So it has the lowest drag coefficient of any production car at 0.20. That combined with a 108.7 kilowatt hour battery makes it capable of 435 plus miles or 700 kilometers on a charge using the WLTP standard. It comes in two trim levels. The base version is the EQS 450 plus and is rear wheel drive, putting out a decent 329 horsepower and 406 pound feet of torque. The top trim is the EQS 580 4MATIC, which is, of course, all-wheel drive with dual motors, good for 516 horsepower and 611 pound-feet of torque. This is a quick one, able to leap to 60 miles an hour in 4.1 seconds, which is plenty quick, I think, for a traditional luxury sedan. We've seen the interior with its optional MBUX hyperscreen across the dash, and now we've seen the exterior design. So, for a high-end luxury car, exterior design is pretty important. Since the reveal yesterday, I have to say I haven't really heard anyone say they actually like this part of the car. Speaking for myself, I'm kind of disappointed. The concept was super sleek, but it still managed to be pretty eye-grabbing, right? And slippery, it looked great. So when you put down like over 100 grand on a car, and I think this is going to start in the $110,000 area, they haven't released those details exactly yet. Your eyes should like light up when you walk out the door and see it in the driveway. And this ain't that. I don't know, Kyle. You got to see this thing in person. We're seeing you on the video on the Inside EVs YouTube channel here. So you got to see it in person and crawl through it. And so I want you to tell us more about it. But first, I want to answer a couple of questions for me. Can anyone other than a Mercedes technician open that hood?
I did ask, and I did ask if we could open it. And the look in the room was kind of like, we're not sure how.
Okay. <Wow. laughs> One more.
It was like, we could. And then like someone grabbed a laptop out. And I'm like, okay, let's just keep it closed. Because we only had a very short period of time to spend with the car. Right. And when I say we, it was really just me. We had to use a Mercedes videographer. It was all locked down, obviously, for COVID restrictions. And so the filming you got was the filming you got. So a lot of people were like, we wanted to see the details. Well, sorry. I also got all this footage. It was really my mistake. An email got buried like yesterday morning, just before the reveal. So it all came in and Alyssa's grabbing one. I'm grabbing one. We're like editing it all up. And then we're just like, everyone's going to get what they get.
So that part right there.
Well, that's a really interesting design quirk.
So who in their right mind thought it was a good idea to put the windshield washer fluid on the front fender where it's like so conspicuous? I mean, the rear backup camera is hidden behind the Mercedes badge. It does this like fancy flip around thing. So why isn't this maybe the behind the front badge?
It's so silly, and I love how wildly stupid it is. This car is engineered to be perfection from Mercedes. Okay. And then they're like, they probably got 99% of the way there and thought, oh, crap, we got to clean the windshield somehow. And they're like, oh, we'll just stick it on there. So, you could do so many other things. You could run a routing through the side mirror. Like, there's so many weird different solutions to this. And I was like, you went for lowest coefficient of drag 0.20, and then you're adding body lines around this thing. I'm like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
So anyone watching who doesn't, who hasn't read the story, the front doesn't, the bonnet doesn't lift up, or it does, but no one knows how to do it. So why the customers or owners have to fill the washer fluid by this weird flap on the side rather than just popping the hood. Right. So,
yeah, I love how stupid it is.
Why doesn't it lift up, though? Like, why doesn't it lift up?
Well, because there's nothing in there that needs, except for the HEPA, it has a huge HEPA filter, right?
It does lift up. Someone will figure out how to do it. There will be a guy.
I think they want you to pay Mercedes technicians to do that part.
Right.
Sure. Yeah, even from that, there'll be third-party service workers that'll get a service manual on this. Mercedes gives service manuals. You can buy them for anything. People will work on this car for that kind of stuff. For the high-voltage components, people might be a little bit more scared to go in and touch a lot of those things other than a Mercedes dealer. But, yeah, not really worried about it, nor are the people who are buying this car. And that's, I don't think it's a deal-breaker at all.
Right. So the exterior design, what are your thoughts on that, Tom?
here we go.
Oh no.
I was one of those holding out hope that it was going to look a little bit better when it was all covered. I mean, we've commented right on it. We've had our followers comment on it in the comment section saying, you know, it doesn't look like a Mercedes. And I was one of those saying, well, it's under all the camo. They can hide design language and everything. I don't know. It does not look like an S. It doesn't look like, you know, the pinnacle of luxury, you know, top of the line Mercedes. You could swap this badge and it can be a Hyundai, you know. That's tough to say, but
you're judging it from pictures.
Yeah. So yeah. In person, Kyle, how did it feel like in person? That's really the key.
I agree 100% with Tom when I'm looking at this video that I shot. And now I understand why everyone commented saying it looks very generic. Because right. In person, I did not get this impression at all. I shot this a while ago, by the way. So I've seen like what it looks like. And in my head, it's a really nice looking car, actually. I hated it when I first saw the pre-production photos. I really hated it when I did like this design thing with Mercedes where they talked about why they made it look like this. I'm like, well, that's really stupid. Then I walked in the studio and I saw it there and I'm like, whoa, that looks great. What's going on? And now I'm back to seeing it in the photos and it doesn't look good. So maybe it was my excitement to see the car, of course, and nerd out and finally, you know, get to touch and feel everything that I had been studying and reading about and trying to provide accurate information on. But I really liked it. And I was talking to my dad about this yesterday because my dad, you know, he's a luxury car guy, you know, well-established. And I was like, so, you know, what's next for you? You know, are you thinking Lucid Air, EQS? You know, he's owned every Tesla there is. And he is more of a Lucid guy over the EQS. He likes the technology more. Okay. And that's going to be an interesting battle. He and I both agree that if you take the front end of the Lucid and the back end of the EQS, that kind of works really well because he and I both don't like the giant trunk on the Lucid. I think that's silly. And we're not crazy about the front end. I thought the front end was better in person, but I you know, it's not perfect. I agree. It could look better. I think the what's important here, not so much as the design, I could care less about that, is the technology that's inside of this car.
And inside is the key, right? This thing.
Yeah, even inside, but also from drivetrain and high voltage component, it's really the first time we've seen the German approach to building an EV work. And what I mean by that is Germans and most car companies in general don't build everything in-house. They have really close engineering suppliers that are usually located near their headquarters that can almost be described as part of the brand, but they're third-party companies. Think of AC Delco and GM, for example. So you have here a situation where we have 400-volt system components. It's not an 800-volt pack. Again, I'm not super concerned about that. Eventually, they'll move to that when suppliers have 800 volts ready. But it seems to have really good range, amazing regen, 290-kilowatt regens, insane. 200-kilowatt fast charging. The engineers tell me it is a flat curve pretty much up to, you know, 60, 70, 80%. Then it kind of pulls off a bit. But some fast charging reports from the wild don't look to be that optimistic. And that could really, you know, they really need to get that charging curve right. So we'll have to test that. But power and range and speed, it all looks really good to me. The top speed of 130 miles an hour is a bit disappointing, especially being a German car, but I'm sure they will have like normal Mercedes have a 130 top speed, unless you get the summer tire option, then they go 155. So we'll see if you have to choose like the sporty one to get 155 out of it.
And there's also, will there be an AMG version of this?
I don't think it's been officially announced, but I don't see why there wouldn't be an AMG version.
Right. I kind of expect there would be. I haven't heard anything. I don't know anything. But
well, they always come a year or two after new product launch.
Yeah, same goes for EQA, EQC, everything. Maybe not the van, but yeah, that's almost it goes without saying, but they just don't talk about it.
Oh, that's one thing I want to mention before we move on to more features on the inside. So this EQS, you know, it's way out of my budget and probably most of people's budgets, but it does, you know, give us a good insight into what's coming for the, you know, the other Mercedes vehicles that are, you know, more affordable, the EQE and different ones like that down the line. So I just want to get that out there as well.
Yeah. Can we talk about the Hyperscreen for a second? I'm curious what you guys think about this, because from my perspective, Mercedes made a huge deal and they're making a big deal over this giant piece of glass. And what they're really making a big deal over is that they made a 56 inch wide piece of glass. There's no crazy screen technology going on here. Certainly there's wet bonding and dry bonding, but in person, it's not that impressive. And I would choose the normal one, but if you get the all-wheel drive here in the US, you can't get anything but the Hyperscreen. It comes included on the 580.
Yeah, I like the big.
Doesn't look terrible, does it?
I mean, I'd like to see the whole thing, like one kind of, you know, sci-fi screen that, you know, works. But I don't know if that's
what we were originally expecting.
Right. But I don't even know if that's in within anyone's capabilities even yet, if they can do that with a curve, because it's like a high temperature thing, right? To get that curve in there, 102 degrees or something.
1202 F, which is 650 C.
Exactly.
Do we know how much that costs as an option?
It's going to be a lot on the 450 plus and standard on the 580. And I think most people are just going to get the 580.
Well, that's if they have a choice. I bet you many of these that make it to the U.S. shores are going to have that baked into the price. They love to pile on the most expensive
options. Well, the top trim has it as standard.
Yeah, but I mean, even the lower trims, I bet you the cars that are arriving in regular allotments have them. I bet you a lot of them do, because I mean, that's how they make so much of their money, the dealers. Is piling on the most expensive options, you know, and if you're swimming in that pond for an S class, you know, unless you're going for the really base model of it, the lowest price one, it, let's say it's a $4,000 or $5,000 option, that's, you know, like you and I, you know, buying a $250 option on a car we get. So we'll see.
I totally agree. I think it's going to be a high take rate. I think they're doing a really good job of selling it. I think they've really pushed it to the point where it's kind of annoying. I don't want to hear about it anymore. Tell me about the car. The screen is just one thing.
Well, the passenger screen, the third screen, if you want to call it that, is simply a replica of what can be done in the middle. And I understand it if it was the passenger gets something bespoke, that if you are in that passenger seat, it's something special. But all it does is replicate what is within an arm's reach. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's not that far for the passenger. And they're like, you can turn on. And they were saying, you can turn on the driver's massage seat from the passenger if the passenger wants to give you a treat. And I'm like, okay, kind of a weird choice of phrase. And I'm like, why would you be like, guess what, darling? I'm going to give you a little massage. Let's like do it in the middle. So that was because I think it looks cool, right? I think it's like, this is cool. It's a big piece of glass. I don't care that it's in three separate screens. I think it looks nice. But the weirdness is that passenger screen doesn't do anything special apart from replicate what is about a foot and a half away.
Okay, go ahead, Kyle, real quick.
The Taycan has a passenger display that's identical to the main display with limited functionality. But I really like it in that because I can pull up the nav or the speed and it feels like you're like in a co-pilot thing. I thought they were really silly till I experienced it.
Right.
And in the Porsche, it works. In the Mercedes, we'll find out, of course. But that does have a neat feature that I think is way over designed and engineered. When you're driving down the road as a driver and there's a passenger, let's say, watching a movie on their passenger display.
So you can do that is something that the passenger screen does. You can watch a movie.
You can watch separate videos from everyone. But if you're even on their level 3 promised, whatever they're going to come out with on this car, and you're as the driver and you look over to the passenger display, it will then shut the display off. So all I would do if my passenger was watching a display is just look over constantly and just shut it off.
it's got like eye tracking. So that's one of the things. So if you want to adjust, this is one of the quirks that I really like about this. If you want to adjust your side view mirrors, it just has one switch, but it knows which way you're looking. So if you look at the passenger side, you know, side view mirror, the knob will adjust that one. Or if you look at yours on the driver's side, it'll adjust that one. So I thought that was really cool. It's really designed for every every seat in the car is, you know, it's the car knows who's sitting in that seat. It's got microphones just for that person, so each person can, you know, ask for the car for different things, and it'll respond to them, you know, specifically. Each passenger also has its own screen, so like the driver's screens, of course, and then the front passenger, but the rear passengers all get a screen, except the middle guy. If you're stuck in the middle, that fold down armrest has a little tablet stashed away in there. It's in case you have, you know, you get your own screen, but it's apparently, according to Marcus Brownlee, it's a Samsung Tab from 2014. So this is a really weird decision.
1914. But here's the thing, Dominic. It's it doesn't need to be new. All it needs to do is run MBUX and control the car's infotainment. Sure. The other thing here is, if you look at the combustion S-Class executive rear seat option, very low take rate. Extremely low take rate on the executive rear seat in the combustion sedan S-Class. So my guess is most of these we'll have all the options up front, and no one will have the screens in the back.
Oh, yeah? You think? I mean, people don't really need screens in the back, because I mentioned liking that option before in the past, and then I was reminded that, oh, yeah, everyone has their own phone anyway, and they're always looking at it, and they're probably not going to look at the screen in the back of the seat anyway. So
it's almost annoying to use the screen in the back. I played around with it. It's nice. You can run individual profiles, really well thought out. Nothing unique to EQS that isn't in GLS or S-Class. So, you know, they just copy pasted that technology over and made it an option. I'm sure in China, where chauffeur driven styles are much more popular than here in the US, it will have a higher take rate for livery service, maybe. But even then, they usually just go for you know, livery service, normal back seats. And then very, very low percentage of people actually have chauffeur drivers. You know, in New York City or LA, you'll find a handful. Like, you'll see occasionally a 7 Series with the passenger seat moved all the way up when you look over in traffic, and you know, okay, it's not on livery plates. That's a private driver. But that's like once a month you see that.
Right. Those are nice looking seats, though. Ventilated, heated.
So I sat back there and I felt that there was great headroom, because I didn't feel my head touching the roof. But if you go back and watch the video, because again, I only sat back there for 30 seconds, I couldn't give a full impression. I actually looked a little bit cramped in the second row. It looked like I didn't feel that as a passenger, but it didn't seem that there was a ton of headroom. And this, of course, is part of that one bow design, that clamshell. They had to sculpt out where your head goes all the way up to the roof just to get you some things. But the big story here is hatchback and the seats fold flat, tons of cargo space.
Right.
So I think we're going to see a new type of S-Class buyer that's more utilitarian here.
Sure. I think from a on a big picture perspective, I think they did exactly what they had to do with this car. Because they didn't try and – well, actually, they did get one stat that no one can beat, which is the drag coefficient. It's the best production car. It beats the new Tesla. It beats what was before it, Lucid, by a margin. A bit,
point or something. Point 0.19 instead of 2.0.
It's crazy efficient, but which is great. But they haven't – this is exactly what I thought this car – when you see the inside and you watch – you know, all those YouTube videos and the way that the seats are made, the way it treats the driver, as Carl said, the best phrase was, it's way over engineered for what you need. And I love that. And I try and tell this to Tesla fans that argue with me on Twitter, who won't accept that there's any other car in the world. And that's Elon Musk makes it. And I try to say to them, but for so many people spending 120 or 150 grand, less is not more. Like, more is more, and they want the stuff. Like, when you change the temperature up or down and the cabin has these cool little LEDs that just go red for a second or blue, like, utterly pointless.
The lighting in this thing is amazing.
Like,
the
interior lighting. Was like 4,000 colors or LEDs or whatever.
Very interactive lighting, like you said. You change everything you do with the lighting, kind of reacts to that. It's awesome. Did you get a chance to see that much in the studio, Kyle?
Well, I have a new E-Class sitting here in the driveway, nice AMG, and it does the same thing. So here's the thing Mercedes can do that no other startup can do is they literally engineered all this stuff for all their other cars. So they make some of the most expensive, plush, premium, technology focused vehicles on the planet. Maybach, right? S-Class, insane technology. You have heated, cooled massage, hot stone massage, rear seats, champagne coolers, all the stuff. They already have all this. So what they needed to do was create a really good electric architecture, make a really efficient shape, and then just stuff everything they already knew how to do in there. And right, that's yeah. what like Lucid will have to, like, let's just say Lucid tries to do this, you know, power nap function that Mercedes has. This is in all the other cars too, or at least in the other S-Classes. And right. Lucid's going to have to go, you know, basically and say, all right, now we need to code the seat to go here. And we think we want this level of cooling. And then let's hire some experts from some university that knows the proper way to rejuvenate you from waking up from a sleep. And let's do a 3-year study on your sleep cycle. You know, Mercedes just does all this. And then it's just a little button. For a startup to do all this, it's impossible for them to match this level of deep integration, thoughtful yeah. features for the humans. They developed an entirely new fragrance for this car called Number 6. And it means that you'll get, it's supposed to smell like a fig tree blowing with a cool breeze around it. And this is reminiscent of apparently what an EQS should smell like. And it's called Number 6 because in 1906, they had a whole fleet of electric vehicles that were hub motor driven. And I think it's so cool that they like can do that. They literally yeah. have 250 sound engineers that made the sounds that the car makes. No one can do these things. Again, do people really care that probably listen to this show? No. But people who are luxury buyers that are ingrained in the Mercedes ecosystem that love over-engineering, and keep in mind, that's a lot of people. This is the only choice. There's no other car that can come close to stuff this car can do.
It's got three different, they worked so hard to engineer out all of the noise. It's like ridiculous amounts of soundproofing this in the wheel arches and the pillars. That is, it's to the point of, I saw one review, to the point of it being eerily quiet. Because there is a thing as being too quiet. It messes with your brain when you're in a car.
Yeah, you get sick.
Yeah. And they're like, so then they engineered all that out and then engineered in a choice of three different sounds. Like one is like a kind of a relaxing drive. One is slightly more. And then one is like a, as if you're driving a, you know.
On volcanoes.
Like a, yeah. Like, but that's so Mercedes. And I'm so pleased they did that because it adds, it's additive to the EV market. Because I say this all the time. I'm so bored with the like people trying to create wars out there of which is, you know, the ultimate EV. There isn't one. It's right. We need to raise the tide and give people options. And so, I don't want to hear that a Model S Plaid, whenever it comes out in a year and a half's time, because it keeps getting put back, is going to do 1.9 whatever seconds. It's so amazing that Tesla can make that car. I just want to praise them for doing that. Sure. And I want to praise Mercedes for making this car, which is additive to the EV world. And as we all say, like, I'm not in the market for this car, but I can really appreciate, you know, what they've done with this. And it's great because it will give more people more choices in an EV world. When, like, if you're an S-Class buyer, I hate to break it to people, they're never going to buy a Tesla Model S. In a million years, they're never going to buy one because they just want something in their life that is not a steering wheel or half a steering wheel and two screens. Like, they just want more. And I think Merck have delivered on this.
They'll sell everyone they can make. Also, interestingly, can we, and we'll finish up on this.
Yeah.
Did you notice, so at least on our side where we, you know, got all the Mercedes stuff leading up to this event, it was, let's talk about how this feature works and that feature works and here's the range and here's everything else. And then the last thing that everyone saw was how it looks. So, you know, they're a little bit nervous about the styling of this vehicle because good they point. Would have shown it first sure. and then waited for the reveal to do everything else. Like most people do, like Hummer EV, for example, yeah. except, you know, here it was, we're going to keep camo on it until the last possible second. Then when you hear about all of our technology and work, then you'll know it's a great car. When we peel it off, you won't just dismiss it.
Yeah. Well, we should, another point I was going to ask you, Tom, about
that two-tone.
The two-tone thing. Is that a Chinese thing? Is that like a taste thing for different markets or Edition is that popular? One. But where would, is there a market that wants, because it looks terrible, but
you can choose an Edition one with or without the two-tone and they should never have optioned it. It's terrible.
Yeah, it looks not good. Yeah. Okay, let's move on because we got a bunch of other stories to talk about. So not only did the first ground up electric Mercedes debut this week, but so did the first, and I hope I got this right, from the ground up electric Audi. So behold, the Audi Q4 e-tron and Q4 e-tron Sportback. I forgot to picture that. Behold.
Hang on. I was trying to get a picture of both of them because there's two cars, but here's the e-tron.
Right. And there you go. And it looks like very Audi-like. So it's built on the MEB platform, which, and you might think of this as being like an upscale Volkswagen ID.4, and you might not be so wrong. It's basically the same size, and a lot of the performance numbers will match up, like the range and different specs like that. But it's not a badge engineering job like the Detroit automakers used to do. It's the Q4 has its own exterior design, which, as you can see, is very Audi-like. The interior is just upscale from the Volkswagen, but it's also very sporty. Like the seats inside look very premium with like lots of side bolstering. The steering wheel has got a flat bottom and it's wrapped in leather with contrasting textures. The center screen is integrated into the dash. And like for a smaller screen, like, you know, not like a Tesla size screen, like this is the way I think it should be. We did get some more information about the different drivetrain options for these than we did the ID.4. So basically there are two battery sizes, rear and all-wheel drive. The base version is the Q4 35, and it gets a 55 kilowatt hour battery with 52 kilowatt hours of that being usable, and a single motor in the back, but it only puts out 168 horsepower and 229 pound-feet of torque. So it only gets to 60 miles an hour in about a relatively leisurely 9 seconds. But it gets 212 miles on the or 341 kilometers on the WLTP range, and that's probably important to use the kilometers in this case, because I don't know if the small battery is going to come to the U.S. I don't know if we heard about
probably
that.
Probably not, because we're not even getting it on the Volkswagen for a while.
Right. Yeah, and yeah, America uses, we like bigger batteries because, you know, we have big distance. People want to think we're ready to go across country at a moment's notice. So the Sportback version, which has a slightly better drag coefficient, gets 5 more miles on the small battery version at 217 miles. And you'll see that, so the different ranges, the Sportback gets, you know, 5 or 7 more miles depending. So the bigger 77 kilowatt hour battery, if you put that under it, you get the Q4 40, and that has, like the ID.4, 201 horsepower, 229 pound-feet of torque, 0 to 60 is 8.5 seconds, and the range is 323 miles or 520 kilometers on the WLTP scale. Of course, if you're going to have a cabin with a car with a cabin with this sporty feel and probably like a more sporty feeling suspension and steering, it makes sense to just go all out, I think, and get the Q4 50, and that has the big battery, all-wheel drive, so it puts out 295 horsepower, 339 pound-feet of torque. Range takes a bit of a hit, but it's still 303 miles, and 6 miles more than that for the Sportback at 309 miles, and it goes 0 to 60 in 6.2 seconds. Kyle, is this enough performance for the look and the price? Which I should add, it's going to start just under 45,000, we think, in the U.S., and probably a couple grand on top of that for the Sportback.
Well, when you're that close to the ID.4, it's almost like, why not just make the jump? I will say, for its purpose, the ID.4 excites me more because it's, for me, it's just really pleasant, happy, and it's not trying to look premium. It's not trying to do anything it's not. And here you put an Audi styling on an ID.4. It's going to drive, I assume, identically. And I think the ID.4 looks better. You guys know I'm not typically a fan of Sportbacks, and I may have criticized this one in the past, but honestly, that back end kind of doesn't look terrible. It looks like a turtle. I don't hate this Sportback as much. I wouldn't get it. Principle, I'm not buying the Sportback. Also, we have the dogs, of course. But I think it comes down to what available features are going to be on this car over ID4. We know the augmented heads-up display is coming to the U.S. On the Q4. We do not get that feature on ID4 for U.S. You can see why we get or don't get features in a video on Inside EVs. I believe it's on our website with Dustin Krause. I did an interview with Director of E-Mobility for Volkswagen about how he packaged the ID4. Here for the Audi side of things, it'll be really neat to do a side-by-side comparison. The seats that they've debuted that we've seen from the interior are all of the S-line seats. And usually with an Audi, you can get a non-S-line as well. And so we don't know what the comfort trims look like yet, which I would argue would be more appealing to me than all the sporty stuff because it's not any more sporty than an ID4. So don't like put seats in there with, you know, crazy stuff that don't do anything really.
Right. It's the very sportiest seats.
But the price is good. The price is good for an Audi. The real question becomes, do you go for a used e-tron full SUV or one of these new? Because I Alyssa's brother actually just crashed his car and he's in the market for an EV SUV. Okay. So we're sort of ID4. We were looking at ID4 Model Y or used e-tron. And I'm kind of like, we've been looking at the market. They're 50 grand for a Prestige with everything, with like 20,000 miles. And we're like, well, that is a nice car. So at that point, you get an amazing charging curve, 150 kilowatts to 80%. You get less efficiency, but you get much more comfort. And I think on par acceleration with Q4 e-tron all-wheel drive, or as near as makes no difference.
What is that acceleration on the regular e-tron?
It's not much, but it's in the sixes.
Okay. So it's very similar to what this might be in the all-wheel drive version.
Yeah, near as makes no difference, I think. Plus, then you can tow more with the full e-tron.
That's true.
And you get great massaging seats. And not to say this won't. This probably will as well because ID4 has massaging seats. But that's just an air bladder. The e-tron has actual individual massagers in the seats.
Just touch on towing for a second. I believe the all-wheel drive versions of this or the big battery versions get a tow, can tow like 2,640.
I think it's 24, 25, right around there. Same as ID4 all-wheel drive.
Okay. Right.
It shouldn't be any different. It's the same chassis. Yeah, it's super nice. Yeah. We knew it was coming. I wouldn't say it's exciting or game-changing. This is going to be as many positive things as Tom and I said about the ID4 and Martin, of course. This is going to just be that with an Audi badge.
So, and what do you think?
Like Audis or that image, that's better.
So, what do you think, Tom?
I really like this vehicle. I love the appearance. I think it looks fantastic. And there's a lot of really loyal Audi buyers. I think this would be right in their wheelhouse. But two of the things that I think have to happen that I've observed with the e-tron here in the U.S. at least is Audi sent very few of them to dealerships and they were almost never on the lot. And when there were, there was one. And you know what? Maybe it was in black and you don't like black cars. In order to move the metal, you have to have inventory. They have to be sitting there so people can touch them, feel them. And, you know, this will disappoint in sales if Audi treats it like they treated the e-tron, where, you know, there was very limited supply. You had a special order them in many cases, or there'd be one on the lot here, one on the lot there. If they want to move these, they have to make sure the staff can explain the cars and go over everything. And they've got to put three or four of them on every lot. And that's the only way you're going to sell them.
Do you think the dealers even want them? Because a lot of times dealers can say, no, just keep it at port. Like, just don't even send it here. We don't want to pay floor plan on that car. If someone wants one, we'll just dealer swap it from someone else because they're selling 30 Q5s for one e-tron. So why would they want to stock? Like, where's the dealer advantage to stock cars that are difficult to sell?
It's a push and a pull. You know, the OEMs will reward you if you sell vehicles that they want you to sell. Like, let's say, you know, they really want to sell as many dealers, let's say, want the Q5. Let's say that's the best-selling Audi they have. And the OEM can say, you know, your normal allotment is 15 Q5s a month. If you start selling more of these Q4s, you know, we'll bump your allotment up to 20 of them a month or something like that. I remember going to having Chevy dealerships tell me, if we don't lease the bolts, we won't get Silverados. And that was the carrot that GM was offering. Look, I know you could sell as many Silverados as we give you. Start leasing some more of these belts, and we'll bump up your allotment of Silverados. So it's kind of like, you know, a wink, wink. You know, it might not even be an official thing where, you know, they can state that, but that's how the industry works. That, you know, if Audi wants to move these vehicles and they tell their dealers, look, we'll reward you for taking in these cars, because, you know, you have to start with the electrification. They can reward them. They can give them the vehicles that they want, that they make more money on, which is the case now. But until that happens, like the e-tron, I really like the e-tron, but it was such a dud here in the U.S. Like I haven't really followed European sales that much. Martin might be able to comment on that better, but I know it didn't sell well here at all. And it was expensive, and you just couldn't find them in the outfitting that you wanted. And there's been millions of studies. People show up to a dealership, they want to touch and feel the vehicle that they're going to buy. A lot of people will order their vehicle. A lot of people will wait, but so much of the sales is somebody looks at a car, they sit in it, they test drive it. They're like, this is perfect. This is what I want. If there's one Q4 sitting on the lot and it's in red, or a color the person doesn't like, that's it. They don't buy it. And Audi has to get on the stick here. And if they want to start selling more of these vehicles, they're going to have to start putting them on the lot. I hope that happens with the Q4, because my thought process was, well, maybe because the e-tron was so expensive, and it was much more expensive than a comparably equipped gas, say, SUV that Audi sells. But now the Q4's price is coming down. So with the incentives, it's very close to what you would spend on a comparably equipped crossover, you know, Audi. So there's no excuse now, is what I'm getting at. You know, they should start bringing these in and putting them on the lots and giving them a fair chance to sell. But I love it. Well, I mean, this is perfect for my sister. When these do land here, I'm gonna take my sister, because my sister's a big Audi fan, over, and this might be the first EV that really works and fits for her, that she likes the appearance. And I think it's a great little car. I can't wait to drive it.
So the my friend Mike, one of my closest friends in North Carolina, who also does some stuff without a spec with us, just leased a new e-tron. I meant to talk about it on one of the other shows. He had a Volvo wagon, of course. You know, all of us love weird Volvo stuff. So he traded his Volvo in on an e-tron. He leased it, this full SUV, and it's the base one. I think it's a not even a premium plus, just a premium. And it was like $390 a month, I think, on a lease with like 10,000 miles a year. I mean, everyone's situation and state's incentives will be different. But it sounds like they had, I think, 6 on the lot, and they did a lease special. And these pop up from time to time, and they sold all 6 of them in like a week.
Wow. That's good. Bodes well. You want to say something, Tom?
Yeah, I'm looking at one of the comments that somebody wrote, two comments he wrote. That's exactly right, talking about inventory. But he said, but I have to say, Audi dealers in Minnesota have stocked e-trons surprisingly well. Then he has another comment that says, right now, 3 dealers in Minnesota have 30 e-trons. And they seem to sell them well. I visit dealers for a living, you know, in addition to what I do at Inside EVs. I don't think I've ever seen on a lot here in New Jersey more than 2 e-trons at once. And so he's saying that they have 30 e-trons and they seem to sell well. Well, that's proven my point. Put them on the lots, have them lined up in all the colors and sizes and shapes, but with different options, and people will buy them. But, you know, this has been a problem with EVs for this last decade. And it's part of why, you know, Elon Musk has said, you know, you know that it's just not going to work in the dealership model, because, you know, the dealers are never going to go for this. And, you know, if the vehicles are there and people can test drive them and drive them, they're going to buy them. But if you have that one EV and it's in the corner of the lot, and there's 5 cars in front of it, and when somebody has to test drive it, there's like, yeah, well, I think, I don't know if it's charged. Let us take a look. We got to move some cars to get it out. That's it. It's like deal over. So, hey, let's hope that, you know, Audi starts taking their EVs a little bit more seriously.
Right. Hey, so we're up against the hour. So I want to move on to the next things, because we still got a bunch of stories we should touch on. So SK Innovation. So sticking with, where are we at? We had some pretty big battery news this week. We talked in previous episodes about LG Energy accusing SK Innovation, they're both from South Korea, battery companies, of theft of commercial secrets. And the International Trade Commission, the ITC, ruled in its favor. And SK Innovation, I'll just call it SKI from now on, was facing a 10-year ban on operating in the U.S. So around the first of the month, the ITC came out and said that SKI didn't really infringe on LG's patents, but it didn't remove the 10-year penalty. So now the two companies have reached a settlement, with SKI agreeing to pay LG Chem, like, or LG Energy, I guess it is, $1.8 billion with a B, dollars. So the deal, though, it saves the federal government from possibly stepping in and taking action on softening the ban or whatever. But more importantly, Ford, VW, and the state of Georgia are breathing huge sighs of relief right now. And that's because they are the battery, SKI is the battery supplier for Ford's EV, the F-150 electric vehicle program coming up, and also Volkswagen's US EV program that's going to be in Chattanooga. So SK Innovation has a $2.6 billion investment in two different battery factories. The first one is going to be a 21.5 gigawatt hour site in Commerce, Georgia. And then there's going to be a 9.8 gigawatt hour one coming up as well. I'm not exactly sure. That might be in Tennessee.
In Chattanooga, I believe.
Oh, right. The second one is 11.7 gigawatt hours. The first one was expected to be ready in 2021. That's this year, with mass production in 2022. And I understand that's nearing completion now. And then the second one, Chattanooga, right, makes sense, right by the VW factory. That'll be like 11.7 gigawatt hours, and that'll supply all the American-made MEB Volkswagen product. So, Martin, is this good news or what?
It's good news for EV buyers, and it's good news for jobs in the US, and good news for Ford, because even though the F-150 is not a big deal over here, I have to pinch myself so often and remind myself that F-150 alone is bigger than just about every other car company, with just one model. And so, enormous news that the battery supply of the F-150 is uninterrupted and it's fine. Different for VW. We're waiting to see what happens there, because VW had done that deal for SKI to supply those cells to the ID.4, and to more VWs coming. Then this fight over the last couple of years between the two Korean companies. And it's a bit like, the kind of two guys brawling in a parking lot over a pretty girl. Meanwhile, there's a third guy that's taken her home while they're fighting, because VW's gone, look, you get on with it, we're going to get some Chinese supply, which is what they've done. So that's not a cut and dried situation with VW in terms of, on a long-term battery supply. But no, it's awesome news, because it just means that more jobs, more battery supply. It's what we want. And it's what we said a couple of months ago on the podcast, that these things rumble on. And most companies you'll find want to reach a solution where nobody's done anything wrong. A settlement happens. Nobody admits any liability. Everyone is fine. And we all get on. No one admits to doing anything at fault. And, we all get on and have some great EV. So I think it's fantastic news all around.
We knew this was going to happen. Man.
1.8.
So but that's worth it. That's nothing for 10 years of business in the US. I think that's a steal.
Oh, it is. And LG, second biggest EV battery, LG, second biggest cell maker for EVs in the world. SKI, sixth. So for them, this is the price. They're so far apart that this is the price that SK will pay to get this over and done with, and to climb up the ladder and to be a bigger player in the world. So I think that's a bargain. It's not a steal, but let's crack on.
Okay, so sticking with batteries for a moment, a few weeks ago we were talking about rumors of a second LG GM Ultium battery factory coming to Tennessee, and we can now say that that's official. The company has announced they would spend $2.3 billion again on a plant in Spring Hill, in Tennessee, to supply cells for the Cadillac Lyriq. Spring Hill is like the biggest GM facility, I guess, in the country, which I didn't know that. So, interestingly, they say the Spring Hill battery plant will have a more cost-effective battery chemistry versus the battery cells produced at the Lordstown plant, which is, being built right now. Initially, the Lyriq will use cells from a different plant, not Lordstown, so overseas. until this new factory is up and running. So, Tom, you have to imagine that this factory is going to supply cells for more than just a Lyric, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is great news. I don't think we need to spend a ton of time on this because, look, this is what we have to see. We have to see investment. It's good that it's domestic for here in the U.S., that we're getting some more battery plants. We need more. This should just be the beginning, you know, and then we should almost be having this discussion almost every podcast. Like, there's a new battery plant opening because, you know, it takes a while to get these things up and running. And if we don't start building all these plants now in 21, 22, 23, by 25, when we're supposed, all these automakers are going to have, you know, 15, 20 different EVs, you know, right, they're not going to have enough cells. So I expect we're going to be talking a lot about battery plant production and new breaking grounds, you know, every month.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the battery production, I believe, at the Tesla factory in Texas. That should be a big part of that. And I believe there's like a lot of like mining going to come on from the North Carolina, I believe. So anyway, that's just one of those things that I'm kind of looking at myself that I'm pretty excited about, to see, you know, how they're going to, you know, create enough supply for all those Cybertrucks or in different vehicles. So, okay, let's move on real quick then. Let's go back to, oh yes. So there's a bit of good news here about the VW ID3. Well, good for Europeans on a budget, at least. There's a new entry version level coming. So, Martin, this is a city trim, they say, and it starts at £30,870, or £28,370 after the £2,500 government discount. So about $39,000 US. Is this a good value, you think? This has tax included, right?
Yeah, so you get $2,500 off the car if it's below 35. And so this is a great deal. And again, I don't think with this car, so entry-level ID3, $28,000 on the market. With this car, that's not the number. The number is, where do dealers start to introduce discounts and what's the monthly fee going to be? Because most people buying this car are probably paying for their motoring costs monthly. And, you know, similarly, I saw this week a Peugeot dealer offering a Peugeot E208, which has a 52 kilowatt hour battery pack. And that was £200 down and about £210 a month. And that, next to a combustion car, becomes a no-brainer, because there's no running costs in comparison to buying petrol. And there's no tax, no road tax annually to pay on our EVs. That's waived. And so if they can, so this is more expensive. This is £3,000 more at the point of purchase. But I think it means that, you know, if those finance numbers come in with a small, you know, a small deposit of, you know, less than £1,000 and then £250, £260 a month, when you come to change your goal for your Polo and you're looking to get into something else, all of a sudden there's a really compelling electric option. Yeah, range is going to be lower on this. Yeah, performance isn't great. It's not as luxurious inside, but I don't think it matters with this car. So that's where I think the story is with this one. It's like, how can we get those buyers into a car like this? Really, really super good news.
So it's got a slightly smaller battery, I guess. It's like a 45 kilowatt hour.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
217 miles of WLTP range.
Fine.
Yeah. All right. So sticking with Volkswagen for a second, we also learned this week that the VW ID4 Pro, and we will get that in the US, will get 260 miles of EPA rated range. That's a step down from the Pro S. But it's one of those cases where you get more mileage for less money. So the ID4 Pro is 82 kilowatt hours rear-wheel drive with a $40,000 MSRP, and the ID4 Pro S has the same size battery, but it's $44,495. But the Pro is apparently a little more efficient somehow. It gets like 99 MPGe combined, or 340 watt hours per mile, as opposed to 97 MPGe or 347 watt hours per mile. Is this just a matter of smaller batteries, Kyle?
Yeah, you know, the hard to say exactly why they're getting 260 miles of range. A lot of it's to wheel size.
Yeah.
Okay. And saving money. So this would be the one I would get, because, you know, I'm more of a value buyer.
They took the sunroof out of the car.
Okay.
They took no 12-way seats. I think you get a 6-way seat.
Right.
No massager and aero wheels.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's lighter and it has smaller wheels. So, you know, 10 miles right. more.
Yeah, it's not much difference. I'm sure we'll have to look at the actual EPA filings. My guess is they took the two, maybe the 250 mile range was like 252. They backed that down to 250. And then this one, maybe they just wanted to make it nice and easy and simple. It wouldn't, I think you get a, if you get a pro and slap the 20s on there or the, whatever the bigger wheels are, it's going to get the same range as a Pro S.
And someone says, a viewer reminds us that the Ioniq 5 is coming out in Korea on Monday, by the way, SK battery pack. So.
Yeah, you know, that's going to be a really interesting car. I got to see the prototype at the charging station randomly a few weeks ago.
Okay,
and, right. That was pretty cool.
Right. And we have a story up this week. So Korea has a Hyundai Motor Group has a charging network called ePIT, and you can look up their it's like E-PIT. And
right, it's their in-house network.
Yeah, and they have the video up, and they had the Ioniq 5 beside the Kia EV6. Side by side, so you can kind of, those are your two options, man. And you could sort of see, you know, which one you like. They're very similar underneath the metal and stuff, but the interiors are slightly designed differently, and they're, you know, different cars. But it's kind of nice to see them like together in the same shot. And
those are two hot EVs, man.
Yeah,
cool.
I can't wait till we get these vehicles.
And you know, their combustion stuff's good too. I'm driving, I have a Hyundai Elantra in the driveway this week for review as well. And it's like, wow, just put all this tech in an EV, it'd be so rad. And this is exactly what this is. Really well thought out stuff.
I saw you had the Sorento Hybrid too on your TikTok.
Right. Just gave that back last week. That was really good, actually. And that means that the plug-in hybrid Sorento is going to be even better.
Mm. Yeah, but these two cars can't come quick enough. So hopefully we see some real world videos arriving early next week. Then from kind of Korean owners that pick up these and these are going to be incredibly popular cars whenever we can see more of them. Not just the charging speed, just because they're just packed full of everything that you want in a car now at a really good price. Whether that is and nice touches as well. So all the basics covered off, like Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, good navigation, integration with EV charging maps and things like that. But then nice touches like the vehicle to load to get power out of the vehicle, 3-point-something on this, like 3.6 kilowatts on these cars. And I think the keyless entry and just nice touches. So, yeah, I think they've done exactly what they needed to do.
So going back to the we were just talking about the cheaper Volkswagen coming out with more range. So speaking of more for less, the single motor version of the Polestar 2 is also coming, and that's also rated for 260 EPA miles. So instead of two 150 kilowatt electric motors, it's going to have 170 kilowatt I thought it was rear-wheel drive, but my notes say front-wheel drive.
No, it's rear-wheel drive.
It's rear-wheel drive, right. That's what I thought. So according to Polestar, the EPA is going to be 260 miles, 418 kilometers, and that's compared to only 233 miles in the all-wheel drive launch edition. There's also going to be a simplified version of the dual-motor Polestar 2, and that's going to have like fewer options, smaller 19-inch wheels with 240 miles of range. And in Europe, there's going to be a 64 kilowatt hour battery option as well, and that'll make it a little bit more affordable over there. But I wanted to hit on, there's a few vehicles. The Shanghai Auto Show is coming up, which is becoming a bigger motor show now. All of a sudden, like Chinese motor shows are kind of becoming more important. So there's a few vehicles making their debuts there that we should know about. First, the Xiaopeng or the Xpeng. P5 is supposed to debut, and they've already put a number of images. Tom, can you tell us just a really quick, just a couple sentences, what you think about this car while Martin digs up this crazy interior shot with the front seats folded down and turning it into a mini theater?
Yeah, sure. We'll have a lot more to talk about this maybe next week's podcast, because I just got a dump of all the info on it this morning, and I haven't had a chance to go through it. Basically, it's... like a family sedan for Xpeng. It doesn't go as far as the P7. it doesn't go as fast as the P7. So they're actually billing it as, you know, the family sedan, and they purposely derated the motors. It doesn't have as much horsepower. It doesn't have as much range. This is for people living in the city, and it comes with the new XPilot 3.5, which has the autonomous driving navigation guided pilot for city streets, which the previous version that's in the P7 doesn't have. So this can navigate point A to point B within city streets. The previous version could do it on the highways, you know, set your navigation, it'll take you there completely hands, you know, basically hands-free. You got to hold the steering wheel just to make sure you're alert, but it'll drive the entire thing, change lanes, exit the highway, but it couldn't operate in city streets. This can. So this is for the people that live in the cities. It's the range isn't going to be as great. The speed isn't going to be as great, but this is aimed to for a family mover within the cities of China.
Hey, Martin, in the show notes, I have a link there for you that's kind of highlighted in pink in future or whatever.
Okay.
Just for a second, is if we can just get this picture of the interior at night. Look what? At this.
No, right? That's not real.
This is in the P5. That was in there. I don't know where that screen comes from.
It looks like it's dropped down from somewhere.
The roof, right? But I thought it had a glass roof, but maybe not.
It can't come up because you can see the bottom. It blocks the view. So by the look of it, that's kind of a white. It's a projector. Yeah, if you look to the left.
Okay.
It's a projector. Yeah.
If you look
to the left over here.
So
it's got a projector in the back, and that's just a simple white screen that comes down, and you just, you know, X-Pung and chill, which will be a new break.
If you want to date night, get away from the kids, you know, you hop in the car with your companion.
Well, I mean, you know,
no one's going to parking lot somewhere and watch the latest. Yeah.
No one's going to cinema these days because of COVID, so you can take the cinema to your car. I love that. That's so cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Pretty cool. And this is what I love seeing. I know I've said it before on our previous podcasts. I love to see these new features that are coming out that we just, you know, it seems like, I mean, this, we could have done this with a gas car. You know, there's no reason why they couldn't have done that. But it seems like with the EVs now, the automakers are thinking outside of the box. They're like, what could we do that just hasn't been done before? Okay, let's make a home theater in your car, you know, and maybe that's because they're thinking, well, if somebody's plugged in and charging, they might need to, you know, spend 40 minutes or a half an hour somewhere when they fill up. And, you know, this, the, let's let them do it in style. I'm not sure if that's the driving force behind this, but, that's what I like to see. What we're getting now with this latest crop of startups is that they're not just, it's not business as usual. They're like, okay, what kind of crazy thing can we do that other people haven't been doing? This is really nice, you know. And yeah. I could see this being a cool feature.
It'll be interesting if this is like just part of the concept, if this is actually like rolled out as an option in vehicles. But we should move on real quick. The next important electric Audi is expected to debut in Shanghai in just a few days. It's the first vehicle to be built on the premium platform electric, the PPE platform. That they've co-developed this one with Porsche, and it's probably going to be about the size of the A5, and it'll have better performance than the Q4 e-tron that we talked about earlier. I think it'll be more efficient than the e-tron GT or Porsche Taycan, which are built on the J1 platform.
I think it looks cool too. Be honest with you, I haven't done a lot of research on this particular vehicle. I wish I could be at the Shanghai show. As you guys know, I've been going to all those Chinese auto shows before COVID. And, you know, I've had a chance to do Beijing, Shanghai, the Guangzhou. And there's some really cool innovation. There's so many car companies. I mean, I know Audi's one of the existing brands, but like there's like hundreds of different car companies, and you get to see some really cool stuff. And I think a lot of innovation has been coming out of China, and I think that's going to continue. So I wish I could be there. This looks cool. There's a couple other cars that I saw that look really cool. Too bad we can't be there. Hopefully by next year we'll be able to have a presence.
So the British brand MG, or formerly British brand, I should say, it's best known for its MG ZS EV or MG 5 EV, which are just like smallish value play crossovers.
Very much value play. Yeah, for what you get, they're good. Yeah.
Sure. But this is what MG is bringing to Shanghai. It's the Cyberster concept, which is, you know, it's a wacky looking sports car coupe thing, long hood. It's like totally, is this like just to grab attention, or are they making some sort of a
Dom, in the Chinese auto shows, these are a dime a dozen. They're everywhere. There's all these wild, funky, crazy designs. It's like you're just walking around and there's one after another. So, I can't imagine them making them. I mean, who knows? But, especially the little two-seaters, they don't do well in the Chinese market.
Sure.
They value the interior space, a lot. And, These tiny little two seaters don't seem to do well, and the weird thing is they make a lot of them in concepts. I sat in a few of them that looked really cool, and when I talked to the people, they're like, "Oh yeah, we're never gonna make this. Like, no one would buy this here." It's like, okay. Well.
All right. Looks like we lost Kyle. So bye. Have fun snowmobiling.
I think he's snowmobiling. Yeah.
Oh, man, I love snowmobiling. So. We were talking a few weeks back about an actual electric Toyota
coming.
And if you scroll up, there's another. That's like from the picture you're showing.
Oh, this one. Okay.
Yeah, that's the actual teaser image, and it's kind of blown up. So here's an idea of what to expect now. And I believe it's going to be a global vehicle. I understand there might be they might be bringing it to the North America for media in a few weeks from now. So. I don't know if we can tell a lot about it from just the nose, but it just the fact that Toyota is building an all electric, crossover, I think it's pretty a big deal. We had an article this week about some survey or something that talking about electric vehicles and which brands were best known for them. And I think Toyota was like number two. They don't even have an electric vehicle, and people see them as like an electric brand, apparently, at least in this particular study. So that's kind of neat.
A lot of people, if you poll people, they think the Prius is an electric car.
Sure.
We know there is a plug-in Prius, but I'm not referring to that. Now, they just think the entire Prius line, they're electric cars. And they do have batteries, bigger than the regular standard battery that you use to start the car. But, there's a lot of misconception about that. So I can understand why people would rate Toyota high on that scale, but it certainly does not match reality.
Yeah. We can see that now in this teaser photo. It's a little higher. You get a sense of kind of size. So it looks like a mid-size crossover. Oh yes, that's true. Right, it has a yoke steering wheel in the concept. We saw on Motor One had a little article on that. That's cross posted over to Inside EVs. All right, let's move along real quick because we're over our time. Our last Shanghai preview is for an all-electric Genesis. We just saw a very nice X-concept sports sedan from them, and we expect they'll soon be showing us the crossover based on the EGMP platform. That would be the cousin to the Kia EV6 and the Hyundai Ioniq 5. This, however, may be something else. According to Motor One, this is likely to be the GV70E, and that's a crossover built on the same platform as their existing G70 SUV. So I'm not sure if we can say a whole lot about that. I mean, the picture to me, this little teaser picture, it looks like a sedan to me, but they're saying it's an SUV, so I'm going to take their word for it. It's kind of disappointing because I'm really looking forward to see the EGMP, and I'm not sure how a slightly larger I think this product, the EGMP product from Genesis, it might take a lot of sales from this other GVE SUV.
I still want to know how you get that. Looks like a sedan from that picture there.
You don't think it's, you don't, yeah. Okay.
I don't know, Martin. Martin, would you weigh in on this?
I don't know. I just, it's hard to tell what it is. It could be a three wheeler, two at the front, one at the back.
But there's a fair amount of the styling from that X concept in this, though, which was a sedan. Yeah. So maybe that's what's sticking in my head.
Cool.
See, real quick, I wanted to touch on the first all-electric Mazda is coming to the U.S., or at least beginning in California this fall with a 35.5 kilowatt-hour battery. This is, to me, a hugely compromised vehicle for now. Apparently, it's going to get a rotary engine plug-in hybrid, and that will be the kind of the spec to really buy it in, because this is like 124 miles WLTP range. So,
don't buy it. Don't buy it. If you don't let your relatives buy it, they'll be in. If it's top highway speed,
top speed of 87 miles an hour.
Yeah, but you know, if you go anywhere near that and it's cold and you're doing elevation and you halve that mileage and it's just no, we shouldn't be making EVs like that. Now it gives EVs a bad name. It's right. Almost worse to release this car in California because people will be like, oh, your car does 124 miles? oh, EVs are rubbish. Like, okay, well, they're not, but you know,
it's almost the same too, because I kind of like the exterior and the entire
it looks nice styling. The doors, it's kind of doors open up. Yeah, like it's got the BMW doors, like the i3 doors.
Yeah.
My 2008 Mini E had a 35 kilowatt hour battery.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So, you know, it's good luck with that, Mazda.
Yeah.
So tomorrow there's a 280 mile single loop race called the Score San Felipe 250 race. So Lordstown Motors, which has the in-wheel motor pickup truck, the endurance pickup truck, they have an entry into this. It's not exactly their truck. I mean, it was built for them by a maker who makes these kind of trucks, but it does have their technology underneath of it all. And I don't know if they're not going to try to place if they can finish only half of the entries in this race actually finish. So it'll be interesting to see if they hold up. There's always a lot of questions about the endurance, no pun intended, of the in-wheel motors of that technology. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how they hold up. I think that the motors themselves should do okay, but yeah, it'll be something to keep your eyes on. I'm not sure what channel that's going to be on. Maybe a sports channel. Check your local listings. So before we head out, I just wanted to say that you should check out the Inside EV's YouTube channel and take a look at this video from our Romanian editor, Andre Nadalia. Let us know what you think of Mercedes EQV. Should they sell it? That's like the big luxury kind of van. And, you know, should they sell that in the United States? It's an interesting vehicle. And Andre, I think, did a great job with this. And so, you know, check that out. And so that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section below, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up, or if you're watching on YouTube, or a rating, or maybe even a little review or whatever, if you're listening on another platform. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Longley is at Tomalog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor, out there in the snow, is at Out of Spec. There's Kyle.
Wait a second.
And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, because not only do you will get a notification for the podcast, but we release videos every week that you might want to take a look at. And we'll see you all next week. Have a good one.